Lasers sound like the stuff of science fiction, right? Sound completely unbelievable. How could our military possibly be using those in future warfare? Guess what? We've just had a recent breakthrough, more great test results that are making lasers a reality. So it's called Athena. Lockheed Martin makes it, and they've been doing a lot of the pioneering in this laser field. Now, what's really exciting about it is that it's so hard to harness that much power and make it compact enough that it's actually going to make practical sense downrange. And they've proven that they can do that. Recently, they tested it against 5 moving drones, so realistic drones that they might go up against with, enemy forces might send against us, for example, or terrorists might send against us. And it successfully shot down all 5 of the drones. This is huge news because it means that in a realistic, practical setting, it's looking very promising. So it could be ready to field quite soon. So when you see the movies or you look at comic books or television shows, when you see laser weapons, they tend to be a color, right? Red or green or something like that. Real lasers, one of the key advantages that they provide is that they are invisible. You actually can't see them. You just see this damage suddenly starting to blow something up. So if we take a look now at what the Athena did to a truck. So we're looking at a truck engine, and the Athena within seconds was able to beam right in there, heat the whole thing up, and burn through the engine of this vehicle. So if you can imagine if you were in that vehicle, all of a sudden, this hole would start appearing in your engine, and the whole thing would just disappear. That's what these lasers do. Now, there's some other key advantages that we should mention. Let me give you 3 of them. 1, unlimited ammo. As long as we have power, we have an unlimited magazine. And downrange, of course, having unlimited ammo can be a huge advantage. 2, it's silent. You don't give the enemy any advance warning that it's coming. And then the 3rd one I wanted to touch on is that it travels at the speed of light. So not only are we delivering powerful, 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 decisive effects, lethality, we're also doing it so rapidly they don't know what hit them. So if you could circle back to that example of being in the car again, that would happen so instantaneously, within seconds, you truly would have no idea what was happening. It would just suddenly start disintegrating, right? So what can we use these against? So we talked about the vehicle a bit. We talked about how Athena has just proven itself against drones. But in the real world application, our forces could use it against the drones. We could use it against aircraft. We could use it against vehicles on the ground, like we mentioned. We could also use it against fast attack boats. And in fact, Athena's sibling, Atom, a couple years ago proved that it could eliminate these fast attack boats. So if you imagine boats start trying to swarm one of our ships, not a problem for this laser. Burns right through the hull. As you can see right there, it's burning right through the hull. I'm incredibly excited about this news, this great news about the successful testing of Athena, because it means that we'll be putting these powerful weapons soon. We could put them in the hands of our warfighters and give them even more powerful weaponry to keep themselves safe and also to deliver the effects that we need. They can be used, laser weapons can be used offensively and, of course, defensively, too, to help protect our homeland. Think of our airports that might be under threat from enemy drones. They could be used to protect our, we could use them statically and used to protect our airports. They could be used to protect our power grid, our nuclear plants. So there's lots of different exciting applications for this technology. It is no longer science fiction, but science fact.
Hey guys, Levana here with For Our Rights. So it is August 12th, 2023, and this is a follow-up video to my previous video that I did explaining why I believe that what happened on Maui on 8/8/23 was in fact a direct attack on the people. So I've been compiling evidence. There's quite a bit of stuff going on here, guys, and there is big time reason to believe that what happened that day, where thousands of people were displaced and thousands are probably dead. We don't know the exact number yet, but I really believe it is going to be in the thousands, and it's absolutely devastating that all of this was, you know, definitely preventable if it was a so-called natural wildfire. And none of it makes any sense that, you know, to think that any of this was completely a naturally occurring event, that it was caused by climate change, is utterly ridiculous and crazy to even believe. And so I started this video with that clip, that news clip, because it's really important. I wanted to point out how this woman is talking about Lockheed Martin's Athena directed energy weapon. And if you notice in there, she mentions the fact that you would not actually see any laser beam coming from the sky, and that it would be completely undetectable to the naked eye. So it's important to bring that up because I have come under fire and I want to apologize because I contributed to spreading what would be misinformation. And that was a photo that was presented to me as supposedly someone had taken this photo in Maui. Turns out this picture was from 2018. I don't know exactly what it was about, where it was from, who took it, but it was not related to what happened in Maui. However, I do apologize about that. I'm not, you know, I'm not perfect. I do make mistakes, but I would like to point out the fact that this does not discredit the theory that this could have and was most likely caused by directed energy weapons. And so if you didn't watch my original video, I would recommend that you check that out and, you know, that you read up on Dr. Judy Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go? On 9/11, we had the same kind of thing where everything was just like completely turned to dust and the cars being melted, you know, molten metal on the asphalt. I mean, these sorts of things do not happen in just a natural you know, wildfire. And the other part of it that is very important that we saw also with the California fires was the spraying of metal particulates into the air in order to, and this is what would accelerate the fires.
Anyone know what this white film that's covering the whole island? Like, am I the only one that sees this, or do you guys see something too?
A little bit of mist in the air, it's kind of weird. And I think I see it from here, but kind of misty today. You notice that? But you notice the mist, right?
Yeah, I see that.
Just trying to figure where it come from.
Yeah, that's weird.
No smell, no nothing, huh?
And there are many reports from people around the islands that saw this white film covering the sky the day before this all happened. There is definitely something bigger going on here. And I've been researching for hours and days now and been getting a lot of information from a lot of different sources. And so, you know, I really think that we need to take a closer look at what is going on and understand that this has so much to do with Agenda 2030. So I've been talking about Agenda 2030 for years now and trying to sound the alarm and warn people about this, that this is the biggest threat to life and liberty and property and our future than anything else. And this plan for sustainable development is really all about removing all private property, putting people into smart cities, and taking control of all of the resources, all of the food, all of the animals, all of the water, and having total control over the population. And so they're going to use this threat, this perceived threat of climate change, in order to push this agenda. And in the meantime, of course, we're going to see these crazy disasters and weather events because of the fact that they are manipulating our weather, that they are purposely changing the climate. And so the first thing I want to point out, in case you did not know, was about this Weather Modification Act. So this is, let's see, the National Weather Modification Policy Act of 1976. And this is in the Congress. And it says that the Congress finds and declares the following: weather-related disasters and hazards, including drought, hurricanes, tornadoes, hail, lightning, fog, floods, and frost, result in substantial human suffering and loss of life, billions of dollars of annual economic losses to owners of crops and other property, and substantial financial loss to the United States Treasury. Weather modification technology has significant potential for preventing, diverting, moderating, or ameliorating the adverse effects of such disasters and hazards, and enhancing crop production and the availability of water. So it goes on to say that the purpose of this act then is therefore declared to be the purpose of the Congress in this act to develop a comprehensive and coordinated national weather modification policy and a national program of weather modification research and development. So there you have it right in black and white. This is not just some kind of crazy conspiracy theory. They are manipulating our weather. And there's other documents on the internet that you can find, and I will put some links in this video for you to do further research about this kind of stuff. So, you know, we saw the white film in the sky. This acted as an accelerant. There's reason to believe that what happened was not natural, that these, you know, homes just being completely turned to dust, you know, while right next to them, other structures are left standing, trees left with the leaves on them, and yet cars, you know, melted into a pool of metal on the asphalt right next to them is just absolutely impossible, unless it was done using some high-powered beam of energy that took out these structures. And so I know it's a crazy thing to accept and believe, but you guys, we really are under attack. We really are at war, and there is an agenda going on behind all of it. And so I want to point out some of the things that I discovered along the way. And so first of all, let me start over here. I want to show you that this picture is from Maui. And again, see all this metal just completely melted onto the asphalt. Same exact thing that we have seen in like Santa Rosa. And we saw that in Santa Rosa, Paradise. We saw that 9/11. And so if you didn't watch my other video, I mentioned that about 9/11. Then the only way that those towers could have been turned into dust the way they were was if they were hit with some kind of high energy powered, you know, weaponry. And so you got to check out Dr. Judy Wood's Where Did the Towers Go? And realize that this is a repeat. And so some important things that I want to share with you guys. Probably one of the first things that I should point out, and I mentioned this a while back, I tried to bring attention to this when it was being passed, but we recently had a law put in place that actually like codifies the plans for sustainable development in Hawaii. It's this is a Senate Bill 2613 relating to sustainable development goals. And basically, the legislature finds, as declared in the World Conservation Congress Hawaii commitments of 2016, that we must undertake profound transformations in how human societies live on Earth, with particular attention to making our patterns of production and consumption more sustainable. And it goes on to say, in July of 2014, the state launched the Aloha Plus Challenge. And this is a statewide commitment to sustainability with the leadership of the governor, four county mayors, Office of Hawaiian Affairs, legislature, and Hawaii Green Growth public-private partners across the state. The Aloha Plus Challenge builds on Hawaii's history of systems thinking, Hawaiian culture and values, and successful track record on sustainability to outline six ambitious goals to be achieved by 2030. Clean energy, local food. They want to at least double local food production for local consumption. All these things sound really great, right? Of course they do. And that's how they're going to sell it to the people, is, you know, that this is all supposed to make everything just so wonderful and peachy, right? All these things sound great, but what people don't understand is what we are actually losing in the process. And so, so this was passed, and they included all of this into the law here, all of the sustainable development goals, which I just want to point out, you know, number 11, sustainable cities and communities that make cities and communities inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable. And they want to ensure access for all to adequate, safe, and affordable housing and basic services. And essentially, it is a form of like socialism, too, where they want to reduce everybody to the same level, give everybody a universal basic income, and put everybody into these smart cities that are all, you know, digitally controlled and connected to the Internet of Things. And that's why they had to do this to Maui, because they need to get rid of these, you know, historical places and basically erase history and, you know, be able to rebuild and build back better into their digital system. So we have these laws that were passed, and, you know, another one that's really important, there's another law that I came across that makes me very suspect too. And I was reading this article right here, and came across it just tonight. So the Civil Beat writes, a new roadmap for battling Hawaii's intensifying natural hazards. And this is kind of like predictive programming going on right here too, talking about how Hawaii is vulnerable to hurricanes, tsunamis, floods, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, lava flows, and sea level rise. And this new guidebook offers local leaders tools for tackling these hazards. So in this guidebook, one of the things that's mentioned down here is saying don't rebuild the status quo. So the report urges county leaders to review the Hawaii Urban Renewal Law, which authorizes local government to give a group or agency the power to overhaul areas ravaged by climate change or inclement weather by calling for their total redevelopment. The law could have been used, for example, to limit the freedom of homeowners to rebuild on the soft sands of Hanalei Bay after a flood wiped out their large homes last year. So this Hawaii Urban Renewal Law basically that does just that. It authorizes local government to give an agency the power to come in and redevelop as they see fit. And so when you look at this Hawaii Urban Renewal Law, which I believe is right here, and I found this section 53-7. So urban renewal projects in disaster areas. And it says here, notwithstanding any other provisions of this chapter where the council of a county certifies that an area within the county is in need of renewal, redevelopment, or rehabilitation as a result of a seismic wave, flood, fire, hurricane, earthquake, storm, volcanic activity, explosion, or other catastrophe, natural or of human origin, herein called disaster area, respecting which the governor of the state has certified the need for disaster assistance under public law, the council of a county may approve an urban renewal plan and an urban renewal project with respect to the area without regard to. So this is important. They can approve the redevelopment without regard to the provisions of this chapter as follows. So there's certain provisions. These are exceptions, right? And then this one is the one that's really important. They can approve the redevelopment without regard to any of the provisions of this chapter requiring public hearings or requiring that the urban renewal plan conform to the master plan for the development of the county or locality as a whole. This part right here, though, any provisions of this chapter requiring public hearings can be ignored under this law. And so I really do believe that they needed to be able to declare the entire area a disaster area in order to come in and redevelop as they see fit without public input because of this law that's in place to protect them and give them the ability to do that. And so, you know, we've also seen that there are contracts in place for big developments, you know, that they were planning already to build, you know, big high rises and these homes, these village home plans for Lahaina. So, you know, and I even got firsthand word from somebody who works for a contractor that said, yes, that they had plans to be rebuilding in Maui soon. And now it's 100%, you know, going to happen in the near future. And actually just today, I saw a news clip of Josh Green talking on the news about how the state of Hawaii is going to step in to take that land. And, you know, and that's the plan is they're going to take the land and they're going to rebuild and they're going to make it into a smart city. And so that's the other really important piece of evidence that I found that somebody shared with me. And that is that they had already been planning for Maui to be one of the very first smart cities. And this right here, this Japan-U.S. Collaborative Smart Grid Demonstration Project in Maui, Island of Hawaii State, a case study. So this one here says, during the period between 2011 and 2016, there had been a smart community project called Jump Smart Maui, held in the island of Maui, Hawaii, U.S., with the objective of effective utilization of renewable energy that had been penetrating on a larger scale and widespread deployment of electric vehicles. A smart community was constructed by Hawaiian and Japanese stakeholders headed by the New Energy and Industrial Technology Development Organization of Japan. So this is the idea. The island of Maui, which provided the stage for Jump Smart Maui, is the second largest island in Hawaii with an area of approximately 1,884 square kilometers, a population of approximately 145,000, and tourism as its major industry. The island's electricity is supplied by Maui Electric. So this goes into how, you know, they had these plans and ideas that Maui would be the beginning of the smart city project, you know, that this would be the testing ground. And, you know, now we're looking at, you know, they have their opportunity. Everything's completely gone. Lahaina is completely gone. And so it's very, very interesting also that Josh Green, you know, just recently, just a month or so ago, was the keynote speaker at this United Nations conference, talking about Hawaii leading the way in, you know, renewable energy, and that he was, you know, we're the first state to mandate that we have 100% renewable energy.
Josh Green touted Hawaii's sustainability accomplishments at the United Nations Economic and Social Council in New York City. The governor was the keynote speaker in the forum that included more than 40 presenters from around the world. Green pointed out that Hawaii is in a unique position as an island state and has tried to lead the way in promoting renewable energy.
We tried to lead on energy and climate. We were the first state to mandate 100% renewable energy for electricity. So it's, again, an opportunity as a small state with technically a small footprint, but we do punch above our weight a little bit because of our position in the Pacific.
Speakers were invited to help implement the United Nations Agenda for Sustainable Development Goals in 2030.
And, they keep touting that Hawaii is leading the way for the Sustainable Development Goals. And that is why this happened. I tell you right now, 100%, because this is the beginning. It's where it's going to begin. And Hawaii always has been at the heart of it, as far as testing grounds for the New World Order in so many different ways. And, so to that end, I also have some other things that I came across too. And that is, who actually owns Maui. The largest landowner is Alexander and Baldwin. And then we've got the Parker family and the state of Hawaii, of course. But then there's this other newer addition to the list, and that is Mahi Pono, the largest private landholder on Maui, having acquired approximately 41,000 acres of land formerly belonging to the Hawaiian Commercial and Sugar Company. So when I took a look at who Mahi Pono is and I pulled up their website, I came across some very interesting things that I found. And they have this little map here, right? And if you go out like this and you look, this is all of the land. Isn't that interesting? Because this is pretty much right in the middle of where the fires were. There was fire here, Lahaina. And even more interesting is that all of these little squares right near where the fires were, says future crop, cattle, forage crop, future crop. So this is their plan to make future crops in this area. So I found that to be very interesting. You know, if they have plans, they're going to need, you know, more space for their plans. And then on top of that, some of the frequently asked questions was down here. How is Mahi Pono collaborating with business leaders statewide to promote the advancement of Hawaii's sustainability goals? So these guys are totally on board with promoting the sustainability goals. And they just happen to be the largest private landholder on Maui. Mahi Pono is a proud member of the Hawaii Green Growth Sustainability Business Forum. The SBF exists to drive private sector action to achieve Hawaii's statewide sustainability goals. The SBF's ongoing discussion on initiative is wide-ranging and covers areas such as the individual sustainability goals of each member company, potential opportunities to promote sustainability-focused policies, legislation at the state and county levels, and the potential for partnerships between members for the advancement of sustainable business practices. And so Mahi Pono is one of the few SBF members from the food and agriculture industry. So one of our priorities within the SBF is to drive the discussion on the state's food security situation. And so remember back here when we looked at, where'd it go now? When we looked at this new law that was put in place, right? And they talk about One of the main goals, of course, is to double local food production. At least double local food production right there for local consumption, right? So it's very important that we take a closer look at all of this. And it is a terrible thing to have to admit that we are under attack by our very own government, but it is the truth and it's the sad truth. And there needs to be justice for what's happened to the people. And of course, we need to figure out what we're going to do to try to stop this. And I mean, the only thing that we really can do at this point is keep spreading the word and keep raising awareness about what is going on, trying to talk to people that are in government, getting good people into government that are going to actually work for the people, and ultimately coming together as a community and, you know, rising up against what's happening. It's, you know, it's not going to get any better. And at this point, it's becoming so obvious that there is a worldwide agenda at play, and it's all interconnected. Everything that happened with COVID, everything that's happening around the world with the climate change agenda, you know, we have got the, you know, a recent executive order signed by the president in relation to, you know, making the climate crisis the number one priority. And it's all interconnected. It's all tied into creating this new world, this new world order. So there's so much evidence. There's so much information out there. And ignorance really is a choice. You know, it's time for us to stop being afraid to look at the truth and understand that there is a huge agenda at play in our world and that the people are under attack. So we got to stand up. We got to, you know, fight back. We got to open our eyes. We got to, you know, be willing to speak about it and talk about it instead of just trying to go along and pretend like these tragedies are actually, you know, normal, that this should have or could have even happened. You know, it's mind blowing. The whole thing is just so mind blowing. So anyway, guys, that is it that I have for now. But if there's more stuff that comes up, I will keep you posted. All right. Please share this video for me. Thank you and aloha.
A haunting but mesmerizing scene from the wildfires in Sonoma County. A man came across this tree burning from the inside out. Matthew McDermott was driving around looking for escape routes as multiple fires closed in on the area he was in. The tree appears that to be hollowed out by embers and flames.
I mean, if you were here and weren't watching the news or didn't have social media, you'd have no idea it was so much devastation on the island. It's, you know, just dark and a little breezy.
Oh my gosh, look at the harbor. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Unbelievable. This looks like Baghdad or something.
Trees burnt, no longer swaying with the wind. Buildings still on fire.
This is gone. The line is gone. There's nothing left. Words. I can't even tell you the sights. We are going to need help. And
we're going to come together and just piece by piece, you know, make put it back. What we can.